Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back. Friday edition brought to you by our great friends at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Imports, microbrews, domestics, the best beer around. Great selection. Snacks, soft drinks. They roast their peanuts every day. And, of course, the pickle bar. I love the barrel pickles. Here it is, the opening weekend of high school football season. Here it is, the opening weekend of college football season. It's time to stock up. Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. We're here in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kierwitz 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Joined by Fran Fisher, Lou Prado, talking about the greatest teams and greatest moments in Penn State history. One team that doesn't get a lot of recognition, Fran, that we were talking about during the break, is that 1947 team that played in the 48 Cotton Bowl in the 13-13 tie, and they did some things that by anyone's standard, Fran, would be remarkable.
It was an unbelievable football team, particularly defensively. The statistics, which I'm sure Lou will be able to spout quicker than I, but it was unbelievable, the per game yardage permitted and individual play permitted.
It was a minus, and I can't remember the exact.
I can't either, Lou.
It was a minus. NCAA records were still held up until a few years ago. Two of them still maybe. They set 7 or 8 defensive records.
It's unbelievable how well they played, and they were loaded, as Steve pointed out also when we were talking, by Notre Dame with the replenishment, let's say, of some vets that came back from the war. Bobby Williams was one of them, and there were several. Joe Colone, mate.
Yeah, a lot of the guys had played in the 41 freshman team correct. And come back, and that was a great team even 10 years later, you basically forgot about them because college football was different. But I've studied that team and talked to a lot of the teams, players, and like Fran said, Bobby Williams, who just recently passed away, was from Greensburg, and Fran introduced me to him a couple years ago. Very nice guy. Had Wally Triplett, first black varsity player on that team, and Ed Chekai. There were just so many. There are probably only 6 or 7 of them from the team that has survived to this day. But it was a great team. The problem was the one thing that happened though is it finished 4th in the nation. But the polls were before the bowl games anyhow. Yeah. Back that went on for years after. But there were so many great teams back then. I mean, the World War teams, because the teams were loaded.
Same reason, that's right.
Loaded with all these veterans some have been in prison camps and shot down in combat and seen a lot of combat. And that was a great team, the most mature team that ever played for Penn State.
And not only that, but when they played in the Cotton Bowl against SMU, against Doak Walker, as usual, it was expected that SMU would not only win, but win big.
Yep,
and
that's right.
Ended up being a tie.
Yeah, and as Ed Chekai, I got teased about it for years, and people forgot that the great Doak Walker missed the extra point.
That's right. Yeah.
And there were certain plays that happened in that game that changed the complexion of the game, it really was a great football team. The 46 and 47 teams, I sort of lump them together because they're a lot of the same players, even though there were a couple difference. But I mean, the biggest stride they make was breaking a color line. I mean, in the Cotton Bowl and in Miami, refused to play in Miami in 1946 because Miami was a segregated city back then. And Wally Triplett actually was recruited by Miami. They show you how recruiting's changed. He actually got a letter. They wanted to recruit him. He's out of Cheltenham High School in Philadelphia. They didn't realize he was black.
Yeah.
I mean,
whoops.
Things had changed. But no, the 46 team is. I've gotten to like them a lot, and as I said, I hung around with them when I was doing the Cyclopedia, and they were just great people.
And there had been some dispute over the years, Fran, that whether Ed Chekai missed that extra point or not. You have a witness testimony.
Yeah, that's interesting. As Lou mentioned, Bob Williams was on that team. Bobby and I go back many years because he coached at Greensburg High School when I was doing high school games back there. And he subsequently moved here to State College with his daughter, Aunt Chris, and we had lunch with him one day, Lou, I think,
right.
And Mike Poorman, and I,
right.
And I, or Lou, or one of us brought up to Bobby, that was there a question about Ed Shekai missing that extra point? Perhaps he made it. And Bobby says, oh, no, I was a holder. So that squashed that.
Yeah, Ed tried to say, because the video, I've watched a video of that game a couple times when I was doing various books. And you can't tell.
No,
I mean,
that's right.
It's so close. Today you'd be gone over, you know, stop action, whole thing, but you can't tell. But, you know, it was a missed extra point, but the other team missed, and you went out with a 13-13 tie, and they were lucky to have been there in the first place. The best part of the story is these military guys had to stay out at the former Navy base, and they jumped the fence. They literally
absolutely
stole the bus. Mm-hmm. And one of the stories I found out later was just amazing. They were having dinner at one of the downtown places, and they got the bus to go to a nightclub. Nightclub was owned by the guy who assassinated the assassinator of
Jack Ruby.
Yeah, it was Jack Ruby's place. Is it called the Carousel? I think it was. Mm-hmm. And then they met Jack Ruby. I mean, it shows you how what a small world it is. When years later, the guy turns out to be a famous, infamous person, but. 47 team, great team. I rate them defensively along with the 68-69 defense. I mean, that was a great defense, too.
Statistically, they were better, but the game was a little different then.
Yes. Well, they went both ways, too. Yeah. They played right. Offense and defense, so you had to play both ways back
then. Right.
Well, I mentioned at the top two great teams separated by 46 years. That brings me to the 94 team. And it's also coincided with Fran coming back into the broadcast booth and being – united with George Paterno on the air.
Shows you how bad a shape they were.
They were great to listen to,
Yes, they were.
You talk about a combination. Yeah. Now, you and Jack are great to listen to, too, because I listen to you a lot, But George and Fran had such a relationship, just like you two guys have, off the microphone, you might say, and you were friends, and that's what made it. Fran was almost like a brother to him, I think, back then.
Oh, like a father more. 94 team has to be, in my estimation, the greatest Penn State football team in the tenure of Penn State football. I can't think of any team that played the game. Now, they got some criticism defensively, but that's because they were so far ahead most of the time that that they weren't playing with their number one unit. But it's an unbelievable team. If you take a look, go back at and just take a look at each game by game, how many points they scored. It was unbelievable. They almost scored at will.
Yeah, they averaged 48 points a game, but it was like 48 points. It was almost 48 points a minute. I mean, when you get down to it, I mean, bing, bing, bing.
And it could have been 96.
Well, you know what was interesting? Think about this. They played USC here. Mm-hmm. Now, this is USC. Rob Johnson was their quarterback, the whole thing. Penn State led 35-0 at halftime.
Yeah, that's unbelievable.
Iowa led 35-0 at halftime. Each one of these games were a rout by halftime. Yeah. And, of course, the Ohio State game. They were the 14th ranked team in the country, and they acted as if it was a scrimmage.
Well, that team, they're celebrating their against the Akron game 20th anniversary. And I've done several stories on them. But I went for one of the preseason online magazines, mostly that's called We Are Penn State. I went through and I did a long story about it, how they really got screwed, and the weekly changes in the polls. Once they beat Michigan at Michigan, where Bobby Engram got the pass from Carey and late in the game, and they went to number one, and that was downhill from that point on. Because the next week, or they had an off week. The next week, 2 weeks later, they played Ohio State, and even though they thrashed Ohio State 63-14, same as Ohio State beat us last year, that three or four writers for Ohio State voted an AP poll for. Against us, and we went down in the AP poll.
Yes.
And a lot of people blame that Indiana game because the two late touchdowns scored 15 points, I think it was, scored in the last couple minutes against the reserves, tired reserves, as you say, because there was so much the defense. But the coaches then voted, but the polls were going down ahead of time. So we just weren't treated fairly. We were just biased the whole time. But it was a great team, and all the talent that came out of that team, the five players – who made first team All America that year? That's the most we've had an All American one time, and Kerry Collins and Kanjana, sort of canceling each out for the Heisman, Biletnikoff Award going the first Biletnikoff going to Bobby Engram. It was just a great team. Unbeaten, uninvited, and unappreciated. Yeah. I think that was
simply amazing. I mean, when you watch them and how they play the game, and Fran, you think they're the greatest Penn State team you've
seen.
Well,
I do. Because of their record, because of their overall excellence. They had a great balance in their offensive attack. It wasn't all Kajana Carter or the ground game, it wasn't a typical Paterno team.
Right.
In as much as the defense did score, allow a lot of points.
Yeah.
But it was a different kind of Paterno team, let's put it that way.
Right. And what strikes me about them is that when you look at how great they happen to be, the mythology of Indiana knocking them out has always been mythology.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Because they dropped to number two after beating Ohio
Absolutely.
State in one poll.
Never
got back. And the other part about that football team, you mentioned it, the great offense. I mean, everything that they did. But I think in the Rose Bowl, Ambrose Fletcher had a couple big kick returns. In that game.
Jared Vicious got a couple passes, guys that came through
through. They had some younger players that played one.
But they were down. I mean, you read what they've said since and how they had to get remotivated for that game, but they had to be down because they knew they didn't have a shot. So right. It was for pride.
And remember, too, and I personally, this is only a personal opinion where I think this played into it. Tom Osborne at that point had not won a national championship.
Exactly. It did play into it. That's what I described.
That's just my opinion, that he had not won it, and I think that played a little bit into it.
No question.
In 83, he had gone for 2 points and had to play for a tie against Miami, could have won it and lost the national championship. And 2 years before, the year before, 93, he lost it again by missing, trying to play it, lost close game. So all the empathy was Tom Osborne. Let's face it, there was also a bias towards Joe.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there was a bias towards Joe that he was a smart aleck, that he said, he said what he wanted to think. He was, playoffs, all that other stuff that continued almost to the end. So I think it was a bias against Penn State. And I think that's why the fans of today probably relate more to that 94 team and even they do to the 82 and 86 teams, because they remember that and how we got cheated. I guess that's my bottom line on it.
What was it like for you, Fran, to walk into the booth during those 6 years and work those games with George? How special were those years for you?
Well, they were special without any question, Steve. Anytime, as you well know, that you're able to walk into a Penn State football radio broadcast booth and do the job, that has to be an honorary,
no doubt,
an honorary situation. But it was, I was a little reluctant, Steve. It had been, 12 years or 16 or I don't know how many. Let's see.
A
dozen years since I called a game. And, of course, George says, Fran, it's like riding a bicycle.
Yeah.
I said, well, but I never could ride a bicycle very well. And he was very helpful because it was not smooth, to say the least, as I'm sure the listeners can attest to. But working with George was a delight because he was a knowledgeable guy. He had a different way of expressing his knowledge. He was not a radio guy. He didn't know sometimes when he was on the air and when he was off the air.
Right.
As a matter of fact, some of the most profound things George ever said, nobody ever heard.
Well,
but it was a delight working. I had, of course, associated with him when he was doing the delayed television network with Ray Scott.
Right.
And he'd come to town on Friday, and we'd have lunch. And he knew I had been to practice, and he wanted to know what I knew. And it only took a few minutes to do that, but
yeah.
We commiserated. So I got to know George very well. And there's one thing I'll say about George, and then we'll get off and where we should be, I guess. There's never a time that he didn't come to State College, years and years and years and years on end, that he wouldn't say, "Hi, Fran, how are Charlotte and the kids?"
Right.
And I never had anybody to ask him about.
I know. Yeah.
I mean, there was never somebody close to him that I could think of to ask about. He was such a thoughtful guy in that regard. People didn't know George, and I loved he and Joe getting in the discussions.
It was Friday night.
Particularly
this Friday night party with the media there and off, everything off the record. And, you know, Joe being a Republican and George being a Democrat and politically, and man, and they were paternos.
I'll tell you when.
they went at it sometimes.
Whenever that started in 94, you know, as you know, the play-by-play guy usually does the pregame interview with the coach. And I got to thinking, gee, maybe it'd be good if George and I did the pregame because of George's relationship. Well, that was a mistake. Because George rarely asked a question. Mostly he had an observation to make about what happened last week or what should happen this week. It was a great experience. Thanks for asking about it, Steve.
Well, and I will disagree with you about the smooth part because I am of the personal opinion that many people look back at that as the golden age of the Penn State Sports Network.
Well, wait a minute. You took over for Fran in the year 2000, didn't you?
Yep. Yeah.
Year 2000. And what happened? The team went into the dumper.
I know.
As soon as you took over, and in 2000, 2001, a burp in 2002, 2000, you were a jinx for a while. You know that.
He straightened them out eventually.
And I know you're personally indebted to what they've done for you, too.
Oh, well, absolutely, because it is very difficult, as anyone will tell you, within the coaching profession or me, even as a player, when you're the next person that follows someone who is legendary in your business.
Oh, stop that, Steve. Let me say this about...
I'm not quite done yet.
Okay? Oh. Well, you know me. Don't talk when I'm interrupting.
I know. I understand that. And the reason it was easy for me was because of him.
Oh, you're very kind. I got to say this about both of us, Steve.
Yes.
Here we are in a major university football program.
Mm-hmm.
Here we are with two guys who have been the play-by-play broadcasters that weren't brought in from Chicago or Los Angeles.
Right.
It says something about this university and the athletic department that they would take two guys, not that we weren't capable, but we didn't really have the resume, Steve.
We didn't have the name.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
And they said, doesn't make any difference. These guys are our kind of guys. They're here. They're close to the program. And I think that says a great deal for Penn State University and its athletic department. That's enough of the sermon, according to St. Francis.
Complete agreement on that, though.
Okay.
Yeah, and there were times where they did reach outside. Fran retired the first time. The Philadelphia guys and what Bill Zimfer.
Bill Campbell,
guys.
Gil Santos.
But I agree with you. I mean, it's I hope that the new athletic director, is listening. She's probably on her way to Ireland. Never hear this, but I hope she takes all that into consideration.
She's actually on the plane with us, so she's going.
Maybe she's listening.
Maybe. Yeah,
your return. Okay, you mentioned there was a long period of time, Lou Prado, where you weren't there, and you only attended
one
game.
And we missed him.
And we did miss him.
Well, I have to tell you, from when I left the 69 season, and I read TV news and became news director at various places, and then went to work for Northwestern University running the broadcast journalism program out of Washington, D.C. I moved back there in summer of 83. I'd see Fran and Jim Tarman and Bud Tallman later on at... at these various places. And I'll never forget, you played basketball in Dayton one time.
Yeah, that's right.
So got together with Fran, and Fran kept saying, hey, ever get back, call me up and get your tickets. Call me and get the tickets. I'm saying, yeah, sure he will. Well, as it turned out, I saw the 1980 Nebraska game with friends from Dayton. We came back, but I didn't see any home games here. I said, it's all bowl games. So we moved back to D.C. in 1983, summer of 83, in the fall. You know, there weren't many TV games, and my wife and I, Carol, we'd ride up to Harrisburg and get a hotel room and watch the games. You know, they're out of town. And once in a while, I called Fran up, and Fran got tickets for a couple games, and then Fran said, if you want season tickets, let me know. Well, it's a show and tell. I'm cleaning out some files, and I found this letter dated January 10th, 1985, and this is what I like to call the First Step Program. Fran was then the executive director of the Nittany Lion Club, and he says, "Dear Lou, Happy New Year, et cetera, et cetera. I'm appreciative of your interest in becoming a member of the Nittany Lion Club, not only to get a season ticket full, but also to help provide the financial support so necessary to keep our athletic program going."
Cue the violins.
And an enclosed brochure, membership application. "I suggest you return your application to me," et cetera, et cetera. And then I got a letter from him on February 4th, 1985. "Dear Lou, please accept our sincere thanks for your Nittany Lion Club membership. We're simply delighted to have you in the fold." Well, and on and on. But Fran was in charge of the Nittany Lion Club, and he's told the story many times how it had to change. But the season ticket policy changed, and I was able to get season tickets in 1984. We had seats over behind where the visitors used to sit over around a 10-yard line. And eventually, I applied for a job up here. I'm going to go, which won in the athletic department. I didn't get it. And I talked to Fran.
I voted against you.
Fran says, "Well, the way you get the job." Fran called, talked to me. He says, "Well, the way you even wrote a letter." I have that letter back there, too. I didn't bring it up. He said, "Well, the way things," it was very, flowery and all that. But he said, "The way you get a job here is you move here. You move here and something, good things happen."
Lou Prado, Fran Fischer. We're not quite done. Final half hour coming up in a moment. Brought to you by our good friends at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, and News Radio 1070 WKOK.
While looking for a vehicle, you know that if it sounds too good to be true, chances are it is too good to be true. You get the runaround, gotta go from place to place. Well, you can just skip all of that and go straight to Sunbury Motor Company. Sunbury Motor Company has been satisfying more customers and selling more cars since 1915, so you know they've got it right. No offers that look good on paper or online, and then you get disappointed when you see them in person. Sunbury Motor Company offers a lineup few other auto dealers in the area can compete with. With the inventory of Ford, Hyundai, Kia, and Lincoln vehicles, there will be no problem finding the right vehicle that fits your needs and your budget. And the friendly, knowledgeable staff's ready and able to help you with everything from the test drive to the drive off the lot. See for yourself at Sunbury Motors. Sunbury Motors Ford, Lincoln, Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury. And Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Look for them online anytime at sunburymotors.com.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Fran said one thing, and then we're going to get to the greatest moments, and that when you sit in that booth, you do realize the privilege of the seat.
Yes.
When you look out at the stadium, you see the crowd, you can still through that one area between the new building on the south end and the stand, you can still see Mount Nittany from there. You understand each game without exception the privilege of the seat. You do know that.
Well put, Steve.
So, all right, greatest moments, and believe me, every game
outside of this broadcast.
Well, of course, yeah, that's needless to say. I mean, we mentioned greatest moments. If you were to say what your greatest moments would be, what would be on the list for consideration? Lou, we'll start with you.
Well, the fans come up with some of the great moments for themselves. Mm-hmm. I mean, Larry Johnson's great day against Michigan State was, and let's say the younger fans. I mean, there's faced certainly the beating of Michigan last year, the way the way the game turned out. I mean,
right.
It had to be a great time, but I guess I live in the past. I mean, so again, the games I've been to, we've talked about several of the games. I mean, there's no one moment that in my mind that stands out among the rest, because there's, as I said, the one that the 15-14 game, because I covered it, is the one that's the most memorable.
Right.
But I was there when the 94 team, we didn't talk about it, came down the end, the last drive, the famous 15 play drive that won the game,
Illinois.
And it, so, but I guess, again, if I had to pinpoint, is when you win the two national championships, particularly, mm-hmm. I said, the 82 game when you got screwed, you think you got screwed all these times, mm-hmm. you didn't have a chance to play for it. But there are just so many, when I put together the greatest games, greatest plays book, greatest plays, I mean, I just wrote about this for the latest Blue White Illustrated that I didn't see the game, but that 1959 game against Syracuse here. I mean, Fran, you were there, and it was just a great game. Syracuse goes on to win the national championship. The one I watched on television, the 1981 Pitt game, you know, I mean, that's the greatest Pitt game for Penn State fans, I think. You know, that Pitt's ahead, seemed like they're going in to make it 21-0 and come back and clean them. But you know, I just have three or four or five, and I have to put together 10. It's hard to pick one.
Oh, my. I'll say it's hard to pick one. It has to be. Are we talking games?
I'm talking about grouping whatever, you know, whatever. Like, if we're brainstorming ideas here about, you know, games that should be nominated.
I'm thinking plays too.
Yeah,
I'm
plays
thinking
too.
Of
yep.
The Giftopoulos interception in '86. I'm thinking of the Franco Harris catch from Chuck Burkhardt. In 1969,
Syracuse.
It saved their non-losing streak.
15-14
as another 15-14.
Didn't Jack block a punt in that game?
I think Jack blocked.
Yes,
a punt
he did.
That game.
Yes,
and they returned every other one. They had this little guy. Yep.
But you know,
and I keep going here. I'm thinking of. Stonehands, Kirk Bauman's catch in the
Nebraska game,
right off the ends of his shoes, and there were so many plays like that.
Those are
so
the only two catches of Kirk Bauman's
career. That's right. He had two catches in that game.
Yeah, and they were both touchdowns. The only two of his career.
Unbelievable.
I think the problem with the vote of your contest is going to be is the people who are going to vote have not seen a lot of these games that we're talking about.
That's probably true.
And they're not going to. It doesn't make an impression on them. I mean, they know about. They've seen enough of Giftopoulos's catch and the Sports Illustrated cover.
Yeah.
Some people may vote for greatest moment when LeVar Arrington leaped into the backfield.
Leap.
I mean, against what Iowa? I think that was
Illinois.
Yep.
Illinois.
Yep.
I mean, but I think the problem with these, and I've put together these help compile lists, and then. Looked at the results sometimes, that people are going to remember the more recent things that we're probably forgetting right now because we live in the past.
That's right. Well, I think it's important that even Penn State students, I don't know how many listeners Penn State students you have here, probably 11 or 12.
Yeah, they're enjoying it.
It's a homework assignment for Steve's class, actually, that he makes them listen. He's good.
But I think it's important, Lou, to us who are living in the past, to have these younger people have their own memories because they're going to be people in the past someday and they're going to talk about them then just as they're talking about them now.
I could go back and, you know, think in the past, I could go back and tell you about some games back in 1902 or 1909.
I was not there, so don't even ask me.
I mean, the one play where you know, the guy ran a blocked the kick and I forget his name now, Kornicki or something like that, because I have to go back and look at my save. He blocked the kick and ran into the wrong end zone. Okay. There are just so many. If you really said the greatest plays, you'd have to go out at the cemeteries and get these guys up and start voting or go up to heaven or wherever they are.
Well, I'm close to them, so I can get to them.
I mean, to me, the greatest single game I saw in Beaver Stadium was the Nebraska game in '82.
That was really the national championship game.
I was just about to say the exact same thing. That was the title game, and it was played at a level of a championship game because Nebraska, on the road, to its credit, drives down the field and takes the lead with a minute 17 to go. Turner Gill, Mike Rozier, and then Penn State comes right back and wins the game.
Yep.
The greatest single game I ever saw Penn State play in terms of total performance – okay, and this will not make the list, but the best game I ever saw Penn State play in terms of total performance was the 86 Alabama game when they won 23-3 in Tuscaloosa.
Yeah.
I never saw a team play better. Alabama never got past the 35-yard line.
Yeah. That's interesting.
John Schaefer only missed three passes in the game. Total, three. I mean, John Schaefer, who could not throw, was 15 of 18 passing. And
unbelievable.
They'd only lost 17 games ever in that stadium, Alabama. To that point. And Penn State was ranked fifth undefeated. Alabama was second and undefeated. And Penn State kicked the living daylights out of them.
Yes, they did.
I mean, that's the best single performance I've seen. Now, that's not going to make the greatest games list.
Yeah.
It won't, but that's the best performance I've seen.
I'm glad Lou brought up some of the more recent moments, because I guarantee people that are from my generation will put on there 2005 against Ohio State when Penn State had that resurgence back into the national spotlight. And that was the first, I think that was the first or the first national game where there was a whiteout for the students and the collective environment at home.
Right. And it was also the beginning of Nittanyville or then Paternoville.
Yes.
And, I think that will be on there.
And the other one from that season is the Northwestern game where, I mean, they were, there are two great plays in there. The one when the fourth down and Robinson was being virtually being sacked and he got the way to the tight end, set up the first down, 15-yard pass, and then the play later through the touchdown pass to Williams, I think it was.
Yeah, Derek. It was Derek Williams. It was Derek Williams' first career touchdown.
I mean, and Northwestern was kicking our butt at halftime. I mean, there's no doubt about it. So, you know, you could take, I guess the way I like to do these when I go pick, I like to pick the, like they pick all-time teams. You can pick an all-time team, but the players of the latest generation are going to get the votes. But if you get it there and you look at pick the team of the decade or the pick the first 100 years or the first 30 years or the, you know, I divide it between the Paterno, the Engel years and the previously. That's a good way to do it when you get down to picking these things.
And Northwestern was kicking Penn State's rear at halftime in Joe's 400th win, and because of the significance of what was his 400th win, Dan Persa was going up and down the field, and then Matt McGloin comes in the second half and rallies Penn State. I think that game will have some memories for people.
Well, do you know what's eerie about that? Is that when Joe surpassed Bear Bryant for 324, and then Joe won 400, one was against Ohio State, one was against Northwestern. Penn State started Matt Seneca at quarterback and lasted a series and then was taken out. And they brought in Zach Mills. They fell behind 27-9, rallied to win. They played Northwestern. Rob Bolden was the starting quarterback, lasted one series. Matt McGloin took over, same thing, rallied from 21-0 down to win. 35. It's eerie, the similarities.
Lousy coaching selections here. He couldn't coach with Hey, you know, when you're talking about this, you talk about the worst moments, too. I mean, you know, if you think
the
about
the worst moments, oh,
my God. No, let's not get into that.
6-4?
I mean, the 6-4, but I mean, I go back to that 99 Minnesota game. I mean, that to me is one of the worst moments that I've ever sat in Beaver Stadium. And the Hail Mary pass and a field goal would be like,
stop it, Lou. I mean,
the six, you know, the 6-4 game. We know Patrick Scholl from the Penn State Alumni Association. Yeah. He calls me up and he says, "Hey, if the Red Sox rally and beat the Yankees in the series, I have tickets to the World Series. Which game do you want to go?" And I said, "Well, the only one I can go to because the schedule's game 2." So Penn State loses the game 6-4. The next day we go up to game 2 of the World Series. And we're 5 rows off the field. And it was cold. It was like 47 degrees, chilling. That's the bloody sock game, the whole thing. So I've got this Penn State jacket that I have over everything else. I'm wearing layers. And the guy's wiping off the seat, the usher. And he looks at me and goes, 6-4. Oh, my God, that game was awful. And I gave one of those generic, well, it didn't go well things. Right? And he says, no, that game was terrible. And Patrick says, well, imagine broadcasting it. And he says, who did that? He says, he did. He goes, I'm so sorry. I said, don't be, I get paid.
One of your 10 greatest moments, my greatest moment was not a game. It was when Joe was chasing the official off the field.
I did that game too. And look, and all he said to him, he grabbed him by, it was Dick Honig. He grabbed him by the because he was in front of him. And all he said, he says, Dick, those two guys down there did a lousy job. That's all he said to him and kept on going. How important, how excited are each of you as the dawning of a new era begins for Penn State football with James Franklin?
Well, it takes a lot to get me excited anyway, Steve. But I got to say this, that this guy, this Mr. James Franklin, has done something that I didn't think would ever happen here at Penn State, number one, and number two, even if it was attempted, I didn't think it would be received. And number three, that the guy has a charisma about him that is infectious. And anybody that says, I don't like James Franklin, hasn't ever met James Franklin.
Exactly.
Now, having said all that, I have a great deal of respect for him. I'm going to cheer like crazy for him because, well, I'd cheer to whoever it is as far as that's concerned. But I think he's got excitement going again, and finally we can look forward instead of constantly remembering bad things that have occurred. Now, we'll never forget them, but now we have a concentration on a positive, which I think is a very healthy situation, and I'm really looking forward to it. But I'm concerned about this first game. I got to tell you that.
Well, I agree with you. This is a great mystery game to me, the opening game.
Absolutely. I mean, for a number of different reasons.
Yes. I mean, I really cannot predict what I think I'll see.
No.
So go ahead.
Well, I'm looking at it a little differently. Yeah, I'm looking at it with an eye on history. Mm-hmm. And history is, you know, a week later, you're history. I've told people, look, the king is dead, long live the king. I mean, I'm going to go back to O'Brien a minute. He saved the program. There's no doubt about it. Now, he wasn't destined here for a long time. We knew that. He wanted to be a pro coach, he said. But the guys that helped save the program, too, were the two legacy recruits, Michael Motti and Michael Zordich. And they were the leaders, and they had the right chemistry. And you have a fresh face here with Franklin, a fresh approach, a coaching staff that's been together for a while. They like each other. They know they know they're playing. I don't think the fans are going to get upset if he has a bad season. Now, how bad? You always have crazy fans. I saw enough of them when I was running the museum during those days when your bad luck and my bad luck were the same. But, I mean, I got so tired of some of those fans complaining. If you don't like it, you know, don't buy tickets. And he's not going to fill Beaver Stadium unless they have, you know, four or five Band-Aids in a row maybe with some of the games. But there's no reason to worry about filling Beaver Stadium. He wins, he'll fill Beaver Stadium. And this first year, we know we're one hand. You know, if we had one hand tied behind our back before, we have only one finger out there trying to fight with what's going on. I'm not sure that the public outside of Penn State's going to look that way, but I think this first season with the recruiting, if he can keep most of his recruits and recruit more, and the way these coaches seem to be together, he's going to win a game that he maybe shouldn't win and lose a game that maybe he should lose. But if they have a bad losing season, I don't think the fans are going to get down on him. And if the sanctions are lifted, I mean, watch out.
Well, I don't think losing one game or even losing to UCF in terms of wins and losses. I don't want to say concerned, but what I'm wondering about is if they should not be successful against UCF, is what that does to the psyche of everybody concerned, very close to the program. Not me.
But, you're right, Fran.
Yeah,
chemistry has a lot to do with
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely,
and you know, and that team that lost to Virginia, O'Brien's team loses to Virginia, got upset by
Ohio University.
Ohio University. I mean, it's just like wow, and they turned it around.
Now, having said all that, I have the ultimate confidence in Franklin and his staff to be able to regenerate that psyche and do the thing, because that's what good football coaches do. It's not how they do when they win; it's how they do when they lose.
I just hope I just hope that there's no coach out on the other side that like the Bert Bellemia did back at Wisconsin when he was assistant coach, I think, and he sent the Tigers to kill our quarterback back when we knocked Zach Mills out and
Robinson.
Robinson. I mean, it was
Mills and Robinson.
And I think, you know, and he intentionally went out to hurt it. And I just, you know, I just hope he can protect our quarterback and quarterbacks, because I still, even if Hackenberg gets hurt, I think based on what we've read, those other two kids can pick up the slack a little bit.
As I've told groups all summer, I said Penn State's been very fortunate over the years. I've always felt like they've had the right guy for the right moment. Bob Higgins was the right guy for the right moment. Rip Engel was. For 46 years, Joe Paterno. For 2 years, Bill O'Brien. Yeah. I said, moving forward, James Franklin's the right guy for the moment. He has brought the passion back to the program.
He has done that.
And he doesn't have to go to all the birthday parties.
Yeah.
But one more thing.
Yep.
What's the over-under on we will have a colorful uniform at least one game, a la Oregon, Maryland?
Stop that!
What do you think?
Under. Okay, so I can't begin to tell you what a privilege it was for me to be here and do the show with both of you. I cannot thank Lou Prado and Fran Fischer enough. Thank you so much for lending us your expertise, your stories, and making the the 2 hours fun.
I missed my nap.
Thank you for inviting us.
Thank you so
much. Yes, thanks, Steve. Steve, Mr. Tripp, thank you, sir.
You're welcome. Thank you for coming in. What an honor.
Brian, look forward to seeing you at the hockey games.
Sounds good. I'll save your seat for you.
He does a great job. Fran Fischer, Lou Prado. Penn State historical gold for the last 2 hours. You can check it out on our podcast at WKOK.com, Steve Jones Show. If you missed any of it, I think if you hooked in with us just after 3 o'clock this afternoon, I have a feeling you stayed the entire time. There are just certain individuals that when you bring them together, they bring with it the combination of wisdom, perspective, that's very important, that I think people enjoy listening to. It's more than just history. It's perspective. It's how you take history, interpret it, and what it means to the foundation of your future. Lou Prado and Fran Fischer both fall into that category. Thus, for the past 2 hours, that made it seem to me on this show feel like 2 minutes. As I said earlier when I started this out, there is a privilege to sitting in that seat that Fran and I do understand and share. And he's the same as I am, that when you walk into that booth and you sit down and you look out upon the stadium, the field, you glance at Mount Nittany, you feel that special sense and what a privilege it is to have the best seat in the house. Fran Fischer brilliantly was in that seat for years, and he is fondly remembered by everyone. To have him on the show today with Lou Prado was an absolute privilege, and Lou's been a dear friend for a long time as well. And he wrote the Penn State Football Encyclopedia, among other books. Outstanding. So our thanks to Lou Prado, our thanks to Fran Fischer. If you missed any of the show, and something tells me once you started listening, you could not stop, you can go to our podcast, Steve Jones Show, and of course at WKOK.com. Today's show has been brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. And we're in the Sunbury Motors studio, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Coming up tonight, high school football. 4 stations carrying games this evening, including WKOK, Kevin Herr, Dick Hort, the coach, on hand. Lewisburg against Shikellamy tonight. Tomorrow, Penn State football, 8:30 the kickoff, 7 a.m. the airtime. And Bucknell opens at home tomorrow night when they take on VMI on Eagle 107. I'm Steve Jones. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you tomorrow from Dublin on News Radio 1070 WKOK.